getting more than you're paid for. The consistent habit of rendering more service and better service than you're paid for is absolutely essential to the successful marketing of your services. There are many sound reasons for this truth. Consider the following. This habit turns the spotlight of favorable attention upon all those who develop it. This habit enables you to profit by the law of contrast, since the majority of people are inclined to do the exact opposite. This habit gives you the benefit of the law of increasing returns and enables you to increase your income. This habit ensures preferred employment at preferred remuneration, as long as there is employment to be had. This habit develops greater skill, efficiency, and earning ability. This habit makes the person who develops it indispensable to an employer, and as a corollary, brings greater capacity for responsibility. This habit inevitably leads to promotion, because it indicates that those who practice it have the ability for supervision and leadership. This habit also enables you to set your own salary. If increased earnings cannot be obtained from one employer, they will be offered gladly by another. These are but a few of the major advantages of rendering more service and better service than you are paid to render.
Not a single one of the 504 men who helped me to build the Science of Personal Achievement was without the active application of this habit of moving on his own personal initiative. And let me give you an illustration of some of the outstanding men who have attained great success by applying this principle along with the other 16 principles of the philosophy. Take Henry J. Kaiser, for instance. During the World War II, he was in the business of building ships for the government. And he needed special cars of material to be shipped in from the East. And this material had to be delivered absolutely on time. And in order to make sure that the material would come through on time, he put two expediters on every car of material, one to stay awake all the time while the other one slept. And they rode those cars straight across the continent, and they were given instructions that if any railroad man dared to sidetrack those cars, that the expediter should get the president of the railroad company on the telephone immediately and demand that those cars move. Take the great American way of life. It's based on the principle of personal initiative. It's carried out by its leaders in the industry, and the application of the principle of following through dates back to the days of the American Revolution, when those 56 determined men signed the greatest document known to mankind. It took definiteness of purpose for them to do that. And Orville and Wilbur Wright, for instance, in the development of the airplane. I had the privilege of riding with Orville Wright in the first airplane that the Wright brothers built. And they chose me as a passenger to ride with Wilbur Wright from Washington down to Alexandria and back 10 miles. And that demonstration made it possible for the Navy to buy one plane. Now, before Orville and Wilbur Wright succeeded in developing this airplane, they failed many times, but they went on their own personal initiative. And Thomas A. Edison, in the development of the incandescent electric lamp. Imagine a man, for instance, standing by through 10,000 different failures, as Mr. Edison did, before giving up. His personal initiative was so definite that he told me that if he hadn't found the secret of the incandescent electric lamp, that at that very moment he would be in the laboratory working on it instead of being out there wasting his time talking with me. And then in a more serious note, Mr. Edison said, "You know, I had to succeed because I finally ran out of things that wouldn't work." And I've thought of that so many times, wondering why more people don't keep on keeping on until they run out of things that won't work, for then they're bound to find the thing that will work. And take myself, for example. In devoting more than 20 years to research for the missing link of this philosophy, now known as the Law of Cosmic Habit Force, my persistent personal initiative finally yielded a full and workable description of this great law of nature into which all the other 16 principles of this philosophy blend and on which they must depend for automatic application. And last but not least, the most important of all, the habit of personal initiative must begin by its application in the small, unimportant circumstances of one's daily life. It is the antidote for procrastination. It is the beginning of all great achievements.
If you do no more than you're actually paid to do, it's obvious that you're not entitled to any more pay. This is a fact against which there is no argument. Every business has either a potential or a real asset known as goodwill. And while this particular asset may not be listed in the inventory as such, it is, nevertheless, an asset without which no business can grow or, for that matter, exist for any great length of time. By the same logic, every person who renders more service and better service than paid to do also possesses a goodwill asset. It is generally known as willingness to exert extra effort. A reputation for efficiency, the strongest and most attractive selling feature you have in marketing yourself, is the deeply ingrained habit of rendering service that is greater in quantity and superior in quality. This principle works just as well in behalf of an employer as it does for an employee, and therein lies the secret of successful business empires and great personal fortunes. It is an undeniable fact that people become harmonious, loyal, and cooperative in their efforts because of motivation. Those who achieve outstanding success, whether as individuals or as heads of business enterprises, understand how to attract these qualities through appropriate motives. Everyone who works for a salary naturally wants more money and a better position. Not everyone, however, understands that better positions and increased salaries come as the result of motivation, and the greatest of all motives to attract these benefits is giving more service and better service than paid for. Another and equally common mistake is to search for something you may already possess. Your greatest opportunity may be right where you are. It is our inherent nature to seek what we believe to be greener pastures in the distance. When we begin to look for a better position at more money, we generally search for it with some other employer. Sometimes this may be necessary, but more often than not, the disadvantages outweigh the advantages. Primarily, the changing of positions deprives short-sighted persons of much of the goodwill value they have built around themselves through long association. Before deciding to change employers, be sure that you've exhausted the possibilities of your present position. Analyze your job and determine in what ways you can make yourself more valuable to the person you're working for. Follow this practice until you have made yourself as nearly indispensable as possible. And remember that indispensability is your strongest argument for a better position or more pay. People sometimes outgrow both their positions and their employers. More often, however, the reverse is true. Before you make any definite decision to leave your present job, take an inventory of your employer and his business. Determine whether or not they offer you a future commensurate with your ability. If the analysis shows that an adequate opportunity does exist, develop it. You already have your foot inside the door. Make yourself indispensable, and very soon the law of increasing returns will begin to reward you. Every competent farmer understands and makes use of this same law. First, he selects soil which is appropriate for the crop he expects it to yield. Second, he prepares the soil by plowing and by fertilizing to make it favorable to the seed he plants. Third, he plants seed which has been carefully selected for soundness. He knows that poor seed cannot yield a good crop. Fourth, he then gives nature a chance to compensate him for his labor through an appropriate period of time. He never sows the seed one day and expects to reap a harvest the next. So it is with marketing personal services. Prepare the soil carefully in which you intend to plant the seed of service. Then cultivate it through conduct that is both harmonious and cooperative. Do not expect to harvest a crop of pay before you have sown the seed of service. Give it time to germinate. No person may be sure of success, no matter what their calling may be, without applying this principle. Give before you try to get.
Suppose that you are an employee working for a firm. Here are some questions which might put your imagination to work very beneficially. First of all, create a plan which will help any employee do a better job. If you can do that, you can up your salary almost instantly. Can you show the company how it can save money on any operation without impairing the same? Can you suggest to the company some item of merchandise it could manufacture and market at a profit? Can you suggest a plan which would serve to give the public in and near the city in which you live a better appreciation of what the company means to the community financially? Can you suggest an idea which would make you happier in your job and worth more to the company? Can you suggest 5 rules of conduct which would make anyone more popular with his or her associates? Can you name 5 benefits you might receive by following the habit of going the extra mile, that is, rendering more service and better service than you're paid to render, and doing it in a positive, pleasing mental attitude? Can you give a practical definition of your idea of success? What would be that definition? My definition would be that success is the ability to get from life whatever you want without violating the rights of other people. Can you name the most important cause of success? Can you name 5 things you could do which might bring you a promotion and more pay? Can you say definitely, first, what position you wish to be holding 5 years from now? Second, what income you hope to be earning? And third, what sort of home you expect to be living in? Whom do you believe to be the most important person living? That answer should interest you very greatly, because the truth is that, as far as you are concerned, you are the most important person now living. Can you name 3 things which makes our American way of life superior to the ways of all other peoples? What are your rules for making and keeping friends? Who does the promoting, an employee or the employer? What are your rules for earning promotion? Can an employee get more by griping and fault-finding than he can by friendly cooperation with the management? Can you state the basic difference between a Democrat and a Republican? Do you dislike people who do not agree with you and your ideas in general? Do you know what is your greatest fault and your greatest virtue? What would you say is the most important asset that you control? Can you control your mental attitude at will? If so, how would you do it? Do you think for yourself or allow others to sway you into their way of thinking? Can you name the 10 people who have made the greatest contributions to what we call the American way of life? Who, in your opinion, is our present-day greatest business and industrial leader, and why? If you can answer all of these questions, you will have developed a marvelous capacity for using your imagination.
Budgeting your time. Before you can market your personal services effectively, you must construct a personal time budget. Nothing you can do will prove to be of greater help or satisfaction. This may be somewhat surprising when you make up your first time budget. Surprising because of your discovery of the amount of time you waste every day. Selling your personal services successfully is the most important business in the world to you, and every successful business operates on a time budget. Only by organizing your time capital, the hours at your disposal, can you conduct your business efficiently and make your capital yield a larger return. Experience has proved that the following schedule is one the majority of people can follow with little or no trouble. Here it is. 8 hours for sleep, 8 hours for work, 4 hours for recreation and health, 2 hours for study and preparation, 2 hours for extra service to others without pay. The first of these periods is 2 hours devoted to study and preparation for greater efficiency in connection with your work. The majority of people have no such provision in their budget, or rather they don't have a time budget at all. Devote the second 2-hour period to rendering extra service for which you receive no pay. This gives you ample time to establish a principle we've already discussed, doing just a little bit more than you're paid for. This period also provides time for your church or community service work. Put this schedule into effect as soon as possible. You'll find you'll be doing approximately one-fourth more work than you've been able to accomplish in the past. And it doesn't mean that you're on duty 12 hours instead of 8. You've just organized your time. You are now, with no more expended effort, accomplishing more in 8 hours than you formerly could do in 12. Here are some other ways to invest those extra 2 hours. 1. Cooperating to a greater extent with your fellow employees or associates. 2. Practice and study to develop the new personality you've resolved to develop. 3. Develop greater skills and improve techniques in your work. 4. Set definite goals in which specified work is to be accomplished. And 5. Improve your spirit and enthusiasm for all your activities. Check your time budget schedule carefully and compare it with your present use of time. Make the check honestly and with frankness and courage, and don't, under any circumstances, give yourself the benefits of any doubts. Reverse that rule and analyze yourself with merciless accuracy. Remember that you're where you are and what you are because of your own conduct. By the time you're through with this searching self-analysis, you may be able to recognize some of the habits which have been standing between you and success. Unless you are a very unusual person, your honest answers to the time budget checklist will point up several habit changes that you must make before you can market your personal services effectively. You can't sell your way through life without understanding the tremendous power of budgeted time. Invest it wisely, and you'll reap dividends for the rest of your life.
So, budget your time, and have a certain time out of the 24 that belongs to you, at least one period. If it's only 1 minute, it'd be better if it were an hour. 1 minute during which you'll go into the inner sanctum of your own soul and communicate with your own creator and tell their subconscious mind to take to your creator a picture of the thing that you want to do and to be in this world. Have a period, a regular period of time for doing that. That should be a part of your definiteness of purpose. So go into the silence, as they sometimes call it. I oftentimes go into the silence when I'm riding on a streetcar or on a train or on an airplane. I have 7 hours, 7 marvelous, wonderful hours of silence every time I go home to California, riding up there, 4 miles up in the air, traveling 350 miles an hour. Nobody can bother me. Nobody wants to bother me. I'm sitting there by myself, silently going over in my mind the things that I want to do and be in the future, the people that I want to help. I've been following that principle for a great number of years. Going into the silence, budgeting my time, and devoting a certain part of it to that profound, sacred privilege that you have of communicating to your subconscious mind the things that you want to do and the things that you want to be. You'll find that it'll be the most profitable of your 24 hours.
Singleness of purpose. Singleness of purpose is a quality without which no one can achieve outstanding success. This is an age of specialization and stiff competition. The person who cannot excel in some specific occupation finds job opportunities steadily decreasing. Consider again the 5 fundamental steps to success which were stressed earlier in this recording. They are, first, the choice of a definite goal to be attained. Second, the development of sufficient power to attain that goal. Third, the perfection of a practical plan to make the attainment possible. Fourth, the accumulation of specialized knowledge. Fifth, persistence in carrying out the plan. Every successful person follows in one form or another this 5-step program. Some follow it unconsciously by accident, while others follow it with definite design and purpose.
Definiteness of purpose, or a specific objective in life, is the starting point of all individual success. Unless one knows what one's goal in life is, there will be no initiative to reach it. At the very beginning of the analysis of definiteness of purpose, let us call your attention to its profound nature and its limitless power as a means of positive thinking. First of all, consider the fact that the Creator gave each of us complete power of control over but one thing, and that is the privilege of directing the mind to whatever purpose we choose. It is evident that the Creator intended us to take full and complete possession of our minds and to direct them with definiteness of purpose, because we know that the person who neglects to do this is penalized through poverty, misery, and failure. The starting point of all individual achievement is the adoption of a definite purpose, accompanied by a definite plan for its attainment, and followed by appropriate action behind that plan. All individual achievements are the results of a motive or a combination of motives. And the basic motives which inspire all voluntary human action are as follows: the emotion of love, the emotion of sex, the desire for material riches, the desire for self-preservation, the desire for freedom of body and mind, the desire for personal expression and recognition by others, the desire for perpetuation of life after death, and these two negatives, which are said to inspire more human action than all other seven motives combined, namely, the desire for revenge for real or imaginary grievances, and the grandfather of them all, fear. Number two, any dominating plan or purpose held in the mind through repetition of thought and emotionalized with faith or a burning desire for its realization is taken over by the subconscious section of the mind and acted upon through whatever natural and logical means that may be available. And number three, any dominating desire, plan, or purpose, which is backed by that state of mind known as faith, is taken over by the subconscious section of the mind and carried out to its logical conclusion speedily. The power of thought is the only thing over which any human being has complete, unquestionable means of control, a fact so astounding that it connotes a close relationship between the mind of man and the source of all power, infinite intelligence. And number four, the subconscious section of the mind appears to be the only doorway of individual approach to the universal supply of infinite intelligence, and it is capable of being influenced only by a definiteness of purpose backed by enduring belief. Definiteness of purpose automatically develops self-reliance, personal initiative, imagination, enthusiasm, self-discipline, and concentration of effort, all of these being prerequisites for the attainment of success. It induces one to budget one's time and to create day-by-day plans which lead to the attainment of one's overall or major purpose in life. It makes one more alert in recognizing opportunities related to the object of one's definite major purpose. It inspires confidence in one's integrity and character, and it attracts the favorable attention of people who may aid one in the attainment of one's aims and purposes in life. It opens the way for the full exercise of that state of mind known as faith by making the mind positive and freeing it from the limitations of fear and doubt and anxiety. Last but not least, it makes one success conscious, this being the first step in the direction of successful achievement in all undertakings. Definiteness of purpose aids one in developing and maintaining a positive mental attitude.
Working with definite purpose toward a single goal has countless advantages. To name just a few, singleness of purpose requires specialization, and specialization tends toward perfection. A definite goal helps to develop the capacity to reach decisions quickly and firmly. Being definite of purpose enables you to master the natural habit of procrastination. It saves untold hours of the energy you would otherwise waste in indecision. A definite purpose serves as a constant reminder that you must progress. Definite purpose fixes your habits so that they're taken over by the subconscious mind and used as a motivating force in driving toward your goal. And finally, a definite purpose develops self-confidence and attracts the confidence of other people.
When I first met Andrew Carnegie, I went to see Mr. Carnegie to write a success story for a magazine based on his stupendous achievements. Originally, he allotted me 3 hours for the interview, but actually it lasted 3 days and nights, during which he was interviewing me with a purpose in mind without my knowing what he was up to. I learned some years later that Mr. Carnegie was holding a stopwatch behind his desk, and he had given me exactly 60 seconds in which to make up my mind after he had given me 3 whole days in which to get the facts. Exactly 29 seconds. That left a margin of 31 seconds between me and an opportunity such as probably no other author ever experienced. I learned later that Mr. Carnegie had given more than 250 people the same test that he gave me, and every one of them flunked it by failure to make up their minds promptly. Mr. Carnegie said that the time required by most of those 250 to make up their minds ran all the way from 3 hours to 3 years. Well, he explained that no one can be counted upon to carry out important assignments or to assume important responsibilities without following the habit of quick and definite decisions. In my case, Mr. Carnegie was also searching for another quality without which he knew I would never follow through with 20 years of research, which was necessary in order to find out what makes successful men and women. It was the habit of turning on more willpower instead of quitting when the going is hard. Mr. Carnegie knew that there is always a time in every undertaking when one meets with obstacles and is overtaken by opposition, and he recognized that the quitter never wins and the winner never quits.
Please fast forward to the end and turn the tape over for proper cueing of side four.